Welcome to The Danger Room, a Marvel Crisis Protocol podcast focused on helping you to prepare for the opponents you are yet to face. We discuss strategy, tips, tricks, and things you should be considering to level up your gameplay. You can continue the conversation with us on our free Discord, and if you've been enjoying our podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon if you're in a position to do so. Links will be in the show notes. This is a competitive-focused podcast, so bear in mind that our opinions are focused through that lens. Regular members include Jacob, Sploosh, Mike, and Chewy.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to another episode of Danger Room. This time, I am with my co-hosts, Sploosh and Jacob. How you guys doing?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty well. How you doing, Mike?
Wonderful. I'm excited about everything.
I can't tell if you're being ironic.
I'm horrible at like being excited, so just take my words at face value.
Okay, fair.
I got like the Jafar from Aladdin when he's like ecstatic. Oh man! If you haven't seen that, please, it's one of the best. But that's like animated. Don't see the Will Smith version.
Sploosh, how you doing?
I'm great.
You're back on the cast. You've been it gone for weird. 2 months.
I'm a guest today. I'm a guest host. I'm like Omnis status at this point. I've been on about as many times as he has.
Yeah, people were DMing me asking you if you were okay.
I think that has to be too because of my lack of Discord presence. I'm currently looking for a new job, so I'm no longer employed to read Discord.
That's true, but you're employed to go to events now.
I am. LVO is happening. The paintbrush is a furiously painting. I would tell you what I'm painting, but that would be spoilers.
Mm. Yeah, I just jammed 2 models to this week as well.
I'm not going to ask you guys what your lists are, but are your lists locked in for LVO, or are you still tweaking them?
I think you're always tweaking till the last second. Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, last year I changed the day before. Yeah, I changed my Thanos from Mind Power to Mind Space like the next day at LVO. I played in both events. But yeah, I feel really good about my characters, and my tactics cards are mostly locked in. I think I have settled on my crises as well. I think there's just a couple tactics cards that are variables at the moment. It's going to come down to playing out more of the matchups that I think are problematic, tuning for that.
And just a peek behind the curtain for the listener, we plan to record in advance of LVO about the lists everyone's taking, the cast members are taking to LVO, and then release that on the Monday after LVO so that it's all, we got that discussion, and then maybe we'll be able to celebrate their triumphs or commiserate their losses, depending on what happens.
It'll be exciting one way or the other, for sure.
Yeah, it'll be fun for us, definitely. And yeah, I don't know. It is definitely also exciting to put your, your opinions on the line and see if they're right. I never forget when we were at NashCon before the event, like the day before, we were going back and forth with Mando about like what we think the meta's like. But all of us are just like shrugging, like, we think we're right. And then afterwards, you know, I ended up winning, and you're like, oh, I guess I was right after all, which is such a good feeling, right? But you don't all, it doesn't always go that way, right? I've definitely experienced surprise. I know in some of the TTS metas, like I remember the big boy meta, I never saw that coming, maybe because I'm not such a fan of the big boys, but who knows what the next thing will be.
Yeah, in the mid part of the last year, I got dunked by not understanding the meta or playing into it. Rough for me.
Same. I think 2022 is probably some of my worst results and best results of MCP history, which is kind of weird. You know, like I always used to make cut, and I missed cut twice in the year, which is crazy. Even saying it, I can't believe that actually happened. And then, I managed to win an event and make top cut in a few things. So, you know,
yeah. I mean, that event was probably the hardest event of the year. NashCon. I would
say. Yeah, I mean, and I don't see LVO as much of a loss, considering I lost to you, and you know, we were kind of helping each other out throughout that experience. And I still feel like the list was very good too, you know. And I made top cut with that list basically after that. So, you know, I guess that list made two cuts, the TTS League and LVO. So, yeah, I don't see that as even a failure, you know.
For sure. Cool. So we're going to talk a little bit about just like our general excitement about the game. I, for one, am like stoked, right? Like, I feel like, so I said this in Discord, and I've said this on other casts that I've guested on lately, and I still think it's a little bit of a hot take. I think the crises changes are all, it's all good. We all know this, but it's normalized, like the NPEs of the game for the most part. I caveat one thing with Senators. Senators is toxic, and I don't think it's going to age well. But outside of that, I think all of the new stuff is really cool, and I'm excited to, like, I think it's good. And then I was going to say I think the new characters have just been like banger after banger. AMG has just been like slaying. They've released so many four threats, and like all of them are like awesome.
Which was their weak spot for sure. Mm-hmm. If people have never heard it, Mike and I did. We did, right? I'm not crazy. We did a four threat tier list. It's on YouTube, and I think we did upload it into the Danger Room as well.
Yeah, it was around the time that like Winter Guard was new.
Yeah, I feel like it's probably aged pretty well, I would think. I mean, you know, but one thing that I feel like I kind of knew, but it was like a subconscious thought was, man, four threats kind of stink in this game. But it's not until you like put it all out into the tier list. I feel like during the tier list, I was realizing like, wow, the A tier and S tier four threats, there just was so few of them. And then like everyone else just fit into like Bs and Cs. And, you know, it's not like B was like a bad character or anything, but they're just not these like stellar characters. And if you think about the other threats in this game, I just feel like four threats were struggling a little bit. So
yeah, when you put it into context of the three threats, like we were excited about so many more three threats.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of a function of list building though, right? I don't know if you guys find this, but when I'm building a roster, I find I have like sometimes four, maybe five, three threats. And like, if I have three, four threats in a list, that's pretty unusual.
Yeah. I agree. Has one four threat.
Yeah. I think most lists should have one, but I think you could do two and it's no longer like weird. I mean, like when Rogue came out, that like was such a relief because X-Men four threats were kind of terrible, and it was kind of nice to have a reliable four threat. But then I found, and I think a lot of X-Men players I talked to felt the same way, you just were like still not taking your like Rogue because that's the four threat at the time, you know. It's kind of like if you could avoid it, you would take your threes and then probably take someone else, like unaffiliated fours and fives or whatever. Mm. And so even when you had the four, it wasn't like enough often to actually play it. And I think that is starting to change. This is definitely something that we'll have to see if that's true or not. But I've heard people claim that they're like more now forcing four threats and then maybe taking like cheaper characters out of affiliation to like make the four threats work correctly. You know, yeah. For example, X-Men would be like Storm, Rogue, Wolverine, and then like stuff. Yeah. Maybe even out on affiliated threes.
Omnus had that podcast recently with Vodka Blitz, right? Where they were like, man, I love this 11 threat core. And I was like, what?
Yeah. Because usually we brag about low cost cores, right? So I'm not even like, I really am not saying right or wrong. I don't know, but it is kind of exciting for the possibility to actually, for four threats to actually like take the stage. Cause I other than like completely broken four threats like Medusa and Enchantress, like four threats were just kind of sleepers in the game.
I mean, and Black Panther's always been sneaky good, but he's always kind of gone a little bit under the radar and has often not quite been good enough to make the cut in a lot of rosters. He'd be like the 12th character, where like Gwen was the 11th. But that even then, we've got a three threat we're considering above a four threat.
Yeah, Mike, you've been kind of quiet by it. I think that you were taking four threats because it made the points work. And it's not that it was a bad, like you took a good four threat, but you weren't like so eager to play it every single game. You still were kind of bringing it often to make points work.
So there's been two instances of like that I can think of. And it was like this time last year for LVO. Yeah, Black Panther and Voodoo, like I didn't really like try to jam them in. They just like came in for specific crises, right?
Mm.
Or setups that I wanted them for. And they often made points work. I mean, it was a lot of it was like, I really want to play Miles, Gwen, Cat, and then you bring double fours, right?
Which yeah.
Would be Voodoo and Panther are just the best fours at the time. But the other time that before that, I was definitely making concessions to jam four threats. That was Enchantress and Medusa.
Yeah.
In fact, I forsaked an entire leadership and affiliation to play them.
No, we had that like unaffiliated 14 and nonsense. That's obviously not a fair fight because those characters were so dumb.
Mm-hmm.
I think 17 threat is still the most common threat value in the game. So building a good 17, and it's quite easy if you've got a good 17 to swap out one of your affiliated threes for an affiliated four and just go, and there's my 18, and I keep my splash characters, which I like and I'm well practiced with. So I can totally understand why you would approach it like that and go, well, this is an easy upgrade. I just changed this character to this character. Now I've got 18. I keep my splash characters. A lot of my play patterns are going to be pretty similar. Maybe that character fills a similar role. I've swapped out like a brawler three for a brawler four or a ranged pew-pew three for a ranged pew-pew four. And I can basically play the same style, the same team, just at a different threat value.
Yeah, but you could also do like the traditional thing is you do like a 5-3. And maybe that's because you just take 1-5 and you already are taking lots of threes probably. And so to take 2-4s is actually like more strain on a roster.
Yeah,
right.
I totally agree. I mean, I was sort of advocating for 1-4. You can that's the reason you might take a 1-4 in a roster is to then upgrade your 17 to an 18. But I think you're right. Historically, like the good fives and the good threes have been better than the good fours normally. That's not entirely true, but you know, as a rule of thumb.
Yeah, let's just say you take like 4 or 5 threes, 1-5, 1-4. Then it's probably just easier at 17 to slot in a 5-3, you know. But 2-4s is a commitment in your roster. At least it can be. But then when you add in unaffiliated, or two affiliations, it gets even weirder.
Well, moving on. I mean, not off the topic, but I do think that the game is now in a much more favorable space for four threats. Not only is 14 threat gone, so the average threat value of games is higher. Also, the four threats coming out have been just seemingly awesome and like really like tuned to their threat value, which is exciting.
Yeah, and I don't know. I don't actually remember if we talked about this in that four threat tier list, but generally you want four threats to be more like, basically AMG had to figure out the math on like, how do we make a four threat better than a three threat and not be a five threat, you know? And I'm not going to get into all that too much, but like these newer characters, like I think Rhino and, Apex and Logan, I'm just getting used. I just want to say Sabretooth Wolverine, but I guess that's kind of not fair to their first characters. Mm. But you guys, we've seen a bunch more. I haven't really decided how I feel about, Spider-Woman, but, anyway, the ones I mentioned for sure meet what I would say is the criteria, which is usually like some kind of displacement and action economy and maybe just some survivability. Cause if they're just dying, then, you know, that kind of sucks.
So, well, one thing is that you didn't mention Agent Venom, but I like to use Agent Venom as an example here. Cause he's basically Hawkeye. If Hawkeye had like cool things to spend his power on. So like not only every time people play Hawkeye, they're always like, oh, but he's always sitting on a bunch of power that he can't spend. Well, Agent Venom is this character. Like, you pay one threat more to be able to do cool things with your power.
To be honest, I haven't thought of that, and I haven't put a lot of thought into Agent Venom at all. I think he's cool. I just don't know much about him. My only hot take on him was, and not that we're doing hot takes, but I kind of wish he had a range 3 throw, which I think would be kind of like symbiote-like. But I don't know, maybe for balance reasons that's overpowered. I just think that would have been cool.
I think he's mobile enough, but I don't know. Jacob, you're going to say something?
Yeah, I've got to say Agent Venom's Exodia card where he gets to like line up everything perfectly and then have this most amazing turn. That is something which kind of gets my juices going of trying to plan around that. I don't think I will ever achieve it, but having something to aim for is always good.
Dude, speaking of cards, Spider-Woman's double agent card is so cool. I was just complaining on a different cast. I don't remember what it was, but I was complaining that S.H.I.E.L.D. and MCP feels like a bunch of soldiers with guns, like they're dudes. And in Marvel Champions, another game that Solution and I play, S.H.I.E.L.D. feels like spies and secret agents, and they're like espionage and like sneaking into things. And I wish S.H.I.E.L.D. played like that in this game. And Spider-Woman and her card are that. So if that's a new direction for S.H.I.E.L.D., I'm stoked.
Yeah, for sure. S.H.I.E.L.D. is really well done in Marvel Champions, and it's a fun game if people haven't tried it. But yeah, because I look at S.H.I.E.L.D. and I'm just like, kind of boring. But I could see Spider-Woman making it more interesting for me.
I got to say, my first instinct when I first saw S.H.I.E.L.D. with its VP comeback mechanic was, I want to play S.H.I.E.L.D. with Killmonger with Usurp and Agent Widow with Interrogate. And I kind of messed around with it and went, no, this probably isn't that great. But maybe actually Spider-Woman with Interrogate, maybe that is a synergy that's worth exploring and actually has serious legs.
Can you interrogate with both characters, or is that like a redundancy thing?
Yeah, you can.
I think it's a ruling on the it's on the forum, but it's not ruled yet. But
okay.
I don't know. I believe if Agent Widow and Spider-Woman are trying to interrogate two separate Dazed targets, I believe that's fine. If they're trying to interrogate the same Dazed target,
ooh,
I think that's,
okay, interesting.
That
yeah,
is
right.
Up
that,
we'll wait
my
for the
question.
Ruling on that. Yeah.
Is the ability called the same thing? It's just interrogate?
Yeah, they're both called interrogate.
But you can webline the same character twice, so why can't you interrogate the same character twice?
Well, people think it has to do with like the strategic genius ruling, right? Where like you can't benefit from Zemo and Strucker simultaneously.
Their
both abilities are named strategic genius, and there's a core rule that says you can't benefit from the same like ability with the same.
Yeah, okay, I see where they're coming from. My expectation is that you can. I'm prepared to be told I'm wrong, but I feel like this is qualitatively different from that, because that you're applying to like a single role or action you're doing, whereas these are a whole bunch of effects that can just trigger in the cleanup phase.
Yeah, I see why you say that, and I had that same like view on it as I was having this discussion with somebody else, and after talking about it, I feel like it could go either way. So,
yeah. So it depends what they rule.
Have to wait for AMG to like officially spoil Spider-Woman and then rule it. I do think that it probably should not behave. You should not be able to like infinitely interrogate the same Dazed model, because like if AMG adds like more interrogate characters, like oh, I dazed a character. What if I just like gained 5 VPs?
Dude, I just picture like a bunch of vampires just feasting on a body.
You know? I guess that's one way of interpreting that superpower. Sure.
I'm just saying it's like the character's down in days, and then there's just like this dog pile of your opponent's characters all interrogating, and I'm using air quotes for the listeners. I just have that image of like a horror movie and a bunch of vampires just feasting.
Man, now you've made me want Vampire Jubilee, who is just hands down the best Jubilee.
Yeah, maybe zombies is another reference, but either way, it's bad for the person being interrogated. I kind of think it shouldn't be doubled up on, but if it does work that way, I'm definitely interested.
Yeah, stocks up on if they add more interrogate models to the game, if that's the ruling. Sweet.
It's interesting though, Mike. I just wanted to pick up something you were saying earlier about how you feel that we're maybe playing a bit higher threat and fours are maybe a bit more viable now. One of the feelings I'm getting is that we're kind of shifting away from the super narrow teams, and that there's a bit more reason to go a bit wider with the new extract setup in particular. And that might encourage you in the opposite direction towards the cheaper characters, so you can go a bit wider. What's your take on that right now?
I think it's crisis dependent. You could still absolutely play like a three wide, like Magneto, Thanos team or Black Order team or some Malekith team or whatever, on like a researcher, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I mean, obviously back in the day, like before the changes, there were 9 extracts, 4 of which were singles, like I'm counting researcher in that. So it's like very easy to just play tall basically all the time. And the other 2 of them you could stack.
Yeah.
So now it's not quite like that, but I don't feel like it's super hard to play like a 3 or 4 wide team on like Skrulls, for example. I think it gets stretched on like Senator, Spider Infected, and that's basically it. I think Paranoia is still okay. You need to have a plan for how fast the scoring is.
I would just say, like, where in the past, I don't think, I would never make the claim that anybody was purely going tall in every situation. But I would say that there were people who were successfully going tall, say, like 80% of their games, you know?
Yeah.
I just think that's kind of not going to be a thing anymore unless you just get really lucky. Because. Like, you can't, the game doesn't just shut down anymore. Like, there isn't, like Mike said, the single extracts are gone. So, like, your opponent's going to probably be scoring something, you know? So, you could still go tall. I just think if you were to, like, think about the consistency of how often are you going to be able to go tall without, like, some kind of negatives, I'm betting it's a lot less than 80%. It's probably more like 50% or something. It depends, too, because your opponent. I don't know. And that's just where the meta will shape up too. Because in my opinion, I think the game's going to get faster. And if the game gets faster, it's harder to get away with being tall.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think we're going to see, kind of probably the average game finished turn 4, maybe pushed into turn 5, depending on exactly what the shape of the meta was. And I think we're going to see more of a shift towards, I mean, it's probably still, the average is still going to be turn 4. But then the maybe is going to be maybe turn 3 rather than maybe turn 5. I think we're kind of just shifting a little bit, like half a turn earlier.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
I think so. We could do the cowardly average game will be turn 4.5, and then, you know, then we're not really making a decision.
The thing is it if the game's going to be like mega slow, both players are opting into it at this point.
Yeah.
True. Yeah.
Where that wasn't always the case before.
Yeah.
So right. I was playing Web Warriors back in the day, and it's like I have infected in cubes, but like my third extract choice is like at most 3 points or 4 with hammers or something. And I was like, I was playing Montessi and I got put on like demons, and like the game went to like 6 or 7 rounds.
So that's a good point. It's no longer a person being like kidnapped and forced into a slow game. Like both people have to kind of agree to it.
Yeah. Yeah, and if both people want to play a fast game, like that can absolutely happen, right?
Oh, there's no doubt in my mind that will happen. Yeah.
Yeah, like if you're like a Web Warriors player playing Scoundrels and you run into X-Men playing Infected, like that game's going to be real fast.
Yep. Like you were saying earlier, with like Senators, it's just super speed. It's crazy.
Senators is weird. The speed is like varying on what people are playing on that any given game.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's guaranteed, but it has the potential.
Yeah, no, Senators can definitely score out incredibly fast.
Yeah.
If your opponent has, like, a toxic list for it, which do exist.
I guess you could argue Paranoia is equally as fast. Right?
It can be, yeah.
Yeah.
The thing with Paranoia, though, is that it's, like, fast for both players.
Sure.
So, like, the game speed is just quicker. It's not like anybody's like blowing anybody else out. The game just is going to end faster, which is a little bit of a weird position to be in. You know, because usually in the past, when you're accelerating the game, your opponent is not scoring much.
So what you're saying is like a swing turn can be even more ridiculous in that situation, because yeah, maybe you're kind of parody the whole way, but the person, they're keeping up with you. So if something goes horribly wrong on, like, say, I don't know, turn three, could just cost the entire game.
Yeah, paranoia feels sort of like a tightrope. I don't know. It's scary to play on in some games.
Yeah, and you're taking damage potentially, so the tightrope's kind of squeezing a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to put parity on that crisis.
I'm most happy that 14 Threat is gone. I hated it the minute it came out, and you can probably go back and find our episode on what I think Sword Base, right? Was the first 14?
Yeah.
I think I had.
No, Senators was first.
I was just going to say, I guess it was Senators. But either way, I'm sure I complained equally on both episodes.
Sword Base was just toxic at 14. Senators was like okay-ish.
Yeah, I just...
But it wasn't until Sword became like, oh, I have to play five characters. Then it became stupid.
Yeah, I just... Right away, I just felt like 14 just made no sense because people want to play their stuff. And when you're playing 14, it destroyed so many leaders, like flat out. Some leaders just couldn't do it. And I, at least with the idea to win a game, I mean, you could definitely do anything you want, but you're certainly going to be disadvantaged against a lot of things. You know, like playing 14 threat like Cable with like X-Force or something. That seems like a problem, you know? I mean, never mind like She-Hulk or something. So I don't know. I one of my most memorable games was a loss to Mando Orange. The game didn't actually matter because it was like a win. We both had, we're 5-0, but, he played like Asgard with like Angela, Thor, and I think Enchantress for sure. Was that the math? And oh my God, I don't think I've ever had so little fun in my entire life. Like Angela just grabbed the senator, and then Enchantress just kept bowing my team away, and Thor was just like 1v1ing in a corner, and it was just torture. And my roster basically didn't function, quite honestly. I think I'm almost positive I played unaffiliated, and I put like Corvus Proxima and like Beast and something, and it was a joke. Like, it was just so silly, and I just felt like my roster didn't function. And if I had played like a normal X-Men roster into what he was doing, I'd just lose. Like, wouldn't have been even close. So I don't know. I don't miss 14 at all. I'm so happy that it's gone. Every once in a while when I'm roster building, I still think about like, oh, what am I going to do at 14? I'm like, wait, I don't have to think about that anymore. And just erase it from my memory.
Do a little happy dance.
Yeah. I mean, you guys agree? Am I crazy? Like, back me up here. Is 14 Threat fun for you?
No, I hated it. Yeah. It was something I always had to consider, and it was awful.
Yeah. Well,
14 Threat didn't exist in like at NashCon 2021. I wouldn't have had to bring stupid Nebula. I could have had like a whole new roster slot.
Yeah, like how many free wins did we get at NashCon off 14 Threat too? Like, listen, I can not like something, and then I will still adapt and exploit it and crush people for not thinking about it, because that's the game, right? Competitively. And I know I got at least two free wins, and I'm sure you got at least two or three yourself, right, Mike?
Yeah, I believe it was two or three, yeah.
And I don't think we played at 14, but we also played against each other. And I think I chose 17 or something.
Yeah,
but
we did play 17.
It could have been 14.
Yeah.
And we're both just noped out. Like, I don't know. I think I chose, but I just was like, no, I'm not into that. Mike actually knows what's up. What happens if we play a real game? And that was just not going to happen. But yeah, we could have easily played 14 against each other in that tournament. Ugh, gross. Yeah, that was... For people that maybe are new and have no idea what we're talking about, Mike and I, and I'll credit, Mike came up with a lot of this himself. Basically, at one point I was like, I can beat, nobody can beat Syndicate on Fisk. And then Mike brought Enchantress Medusa, and I'm pretty sure it was unaffiliated at 16.
Yeah, I played, yeah, just the two of them with like Okoye and Domino or some characters that weren't super important.
Yeah, and it was like 15 or 16 threat, because at the time that was like a big deal for Syndicate. And... He not only beat me, but it was like, and it was an annihilation. And then at some point the idea came of like, and you know what? And Pat spawned a little bit of this too, because Pat played and should have lost, sorry, Shadow Marvel, in a cut on Sword. And then I think they played Sword again like the next week.
Yeah, no, the story with Pat was he played Sword twice in a row. Both were 14 points. But the first one he played Defenders with like Strange, like all affiliated.
Yeah.
And he was dead on board, but Shadow Marvel like missed something and cost him
the game. He missed the win. He didn't see the line.
So Pat wins and moves on. They get Sword again, and then Pat brings out like this five wide unaffiliated Enchantress team, and it just like dominates.
And was it Medusa too or no?
No, there was no Medusa there.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, so then our obsession with Medusa Enchantress was like, well, why can't we just do what Pat's doing but having Medusa Enchantress? And then you add in like, I think R&D. Yeah, it was R&D because R&D was busted. And like jumping over people and like having a, basically if you lost Pryo, it was like unstoppable win on Sword, because you could just move people off of the points and stuff.
Yeah, Valkyrie and Enchantress had like guaranteed round one displacement with R&D, and then they could flip as well, and it was stupid.
Yeah. So anyway, I don't miss that, and I'm so happy it's gone. And thank you, AMG, for doing that. And for people wondering why 14 thread is gone, this is why. Anyway, you want to play your stuff, right? You want to play your leader and some cool characters.
And yeah, 14 was just like too narrow. Pagani and Sarah said something to that effect on the Across the Bifrost episode they did with Pat and TT.
Oh, I didn't hear that.
Yeah. Pagani basically just said that it was too low and people don't get to play their stuff. That's the gist of it.
Yeah, and then and some people do get to play their stuff.
Yeah, that.
But then you don't get to play your stuff, but they get to play their stuff, and that's just unfair. And then you take degenerates like us who even make some weird unaffiliated thing, and it gets even worse. So, anyway, goodbye, 14th thread. I will not miss you.
Jacob, anything on that? It's a bit long-winded.
Yeah, I didn't hate 14 as much as you guys did. But I won't miss having to plan for it in my roster construction. I'll put it like that.
Yeah, that was most of my gripe with it.
Like always having like two threats because like, on 14, I needed to like have more characters.
Yeah, you needed, because of Sword, you needed to have a 5-5 14 plan unless you had a very specific other plan for how you were going to deal with that situation. But often that meant you needed two twos, and that then shaped part of your roster construction.
Yeah. Exactly.
I didn't get a chance to say it too. I'll just echo what Mike said, that the new characters are so much better lately for whatever reason. And I'm very grateful for that. It's just like every time I'm kind of beaten up and like, oh no, a fourth threat, they're going to suck. And then I'm reading the character and I'm like, oh, actually, this is pretty sweet. And then it just keeps happening that, oh, this character's cool. This character's cool. And then we all have a panic attack because it's like, how the hell am I going to fill these cool characters in my roster? Like, legitimately, I can't remember ever a time when there was so many cool characters at once. And I'm referring to a lot of things that I don't even think are out yet. What is the release date of these, in January? Do you guys even know? Like,
Rhino comes out. We're recording on Friday the 13th, and Rhino came out today.
Ooh, okay.
And then Spider-Woman, Agent Venom, Beta Ray Bill, and Ulick all come out like the first or second Friday of February.
Okay. Yeah. So, man, it's just, it's crazy. I thinking about LVO, and I was like, what, can I play Rhino? I want to play Rhino. Can I play, you know, Apex Predator? I want to play Apex Predator. Can I play Logan? I want to play Logan. It was just like, whoa, how am I going to fit all these characters?
And, yep.
That's a good problem to have.
Anything else on that, Jacob?
Yeah, I think the shakeup we've had of the crises and the way the game feels at the minute, it feels much fresher. We felt like we were in a bit of a rut, and I feel like we're right out of that. And I think it feels like the game's in a great place right now.
I agree. I'm sure there will be degeneracy on the horizon, so prepare to be mad.
That's part of our job, though. We're as much as we love everything, we also try to break everything.
Yeah. But then we tell everyone how we break it and how to try and play around it. So, you know, we help us heal as well as hurt.
True. Yeah, you're like the mob where you create problems and then offer the solution and people pay you to fix the problems that you caused.
Yeah, except instead of paying off the cops, we yell at the developers to fix it.
Cool.
That's hilarious. That's a good analogy. I like it.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to talk about how we're going to reflect on our Christmas episodes. I think we all here feel like they turned out fantastically. I think it shows in the listener growth and just the general excitement I see on Discord from people. I've had personal anecdotes from people saying how much they loved it. Yeah, it's been really good. I've seen numerous people recommend our episodes, which is really exciting. So I guess let's just say thank you to all the guests that came on and did that with us.
Yeah, and I just take an opportunity to say thank you to Mike. I know how much work those things were, and I know the sort of the grind it felt at times, but I think we put out a really good product, and I think people are going to be referring back to them for a while at least. It's a shame that we didn't get the new crises before we started recording them, but it is what it is, and a lot of the content there is kind of crisis agnostic. So in terms of game plans and approaches and characters and tactics cards, a lot of that is not quite evergreen, but, you know, much more, it's rode through the crisis changes we've seen.
I listened to a bunch of them and I was constantly surprised at the cool innovations that people brought to the table. And I absolutely appreciate you guys putting it together and all that energy. And then of course the guests who made it really interesting. So it's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I vividly remember Sploosh DMing me at some point while we were doing the episodes. He's like, these episodes keep making me want to like try a whole bunch of random things. I'm like, I guess they're working.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, the brewing. It's like,
After pretty much every episode I listened to, I was all recorded. I was like, man, I kind of want to put that on the table and see how that works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've also been playing some Marvel Snap lately, and it's like that moment when a new card comes out, you see someone play it, and then you immediately just want to play that deck. I had the same experience with listening to those episodes. It's just like, oh man, like as an example, like the Hydra and doing like what was it, like a double agent on Hulk to like
sleeper agent, people,
sleeper agent Hulk, and yeah, so they can't brace. I was like, that sounds so fun. I need to be trying that. And, you know, just different things like that. And, you know, there's a lot of those episodes that brought that kind of stuff to the forefront.
Yeah, there's a lot of cumulative expertise across all of them, which is cool. Sweet. All right, do you want to get into our main topic then?
Yes.
All right, so this is something that I've been wanting to talk about for a while, and just kind of dawned on me one day, and it's something that I see that I feel like I do a decent job of, and I feel like I get a lot of result, like I win a lot of games because I've been able to do this effectively, at least I think. And it's like what I call like dissecting your opponent's list, and this is very relevant in real life events because you obviously don't have time to like analyze all your opponent's stuff ahead of time, and it's even relevant in the league now since the lists are not locked and it's completely random and what your opponent's going to play. So in fact, Pat said something on Strike Better this week that was like, it was completely useless for me to look at what my opponents were playing because they just played random stuff every game.
Hell yeah. It's working.
But yeah. And like, so basically what I'm talking about is, you'll like, role priority. I mean, like Sploosh said before our cast, he's like, you just start, don't even think about anything before priority happens because there's just, you don't have agency. You just, that's a starting point.
Well, also, don't get comfortable because someone might say, I want to stand on, I want to be on that side of the board, you know?
Right.
So, you know what I'm saying? You don't want to put all your stuff down, get all comfortable, and then the guy's like, yeah, I'm second, you know, I'm going to be on that side, so get up.
Right.
Well, so yeah, this is much more relevant for real life events, but if you get to the table before your opponent, I think there's an argument that you eye up which side of the board you like the look of. Because what happens a lot of the time is just people are apathetic and like, yeah, I'll just stay here because my stuff's here. And it's easier for me. So if you get to the table first and you're like, actually, I quite like that size 3 there. I want that to be on their side of the table so I can throw it at them or whatever. It's going to block deployment or whatever you can see. And then go on the other side. So you, they may well ask you to swap round and you should do it with good grace, obviously. But which side of the table you choose to stand on, you know, that's something to think about in turn minus one.
I agree. That's actually my experience. Is that your experience, Mike?
Yeah. Well, no. I mean, maybe like rounds one or two or something, but like the notoriously like competitive players are notorious. I say notorious like it's bad, but it's fine. But just the usual suspects who want to win, they'll make you change sides. I'll do it.
Yeah. Too. And then you get absolute heathens like me who make you play across the table. Like left
sideways.
Right. Yeah, sideways.
I've still never actually got anyone to do that. They actually ban it at NashCon.
Did they?
Yeah. I asked because I was all about making Sooner play sideways, but they were Oh man. I'm like 6'1", so the sideways thing I think really helps with if you're tall.
Yeah, I'm 6'5".
And some people are more
freaking giants up
shorter.
I'm only 5'7".
Yeah, see Mike, you know.
So Jacob's like almost a foot taller than me.
There you go, guys. There's your tech against Mike if you meet him at LVO, is make him play sideways on the tables.
Yeah, just give me the side with like the size 5 building so I like can't see over it.
It's less relevant in this game, but in X-Wing, it was widely like a big joke that the tallest people usually won because the game was a lot about spatial distancing and visualizing like where things can go. And the height just kind of gave you that like upward sort of bird in the sky thing. And I wasn't against, even as tall as I am, getting up on a chair if I had to, just to get the perfect angle. Luckily, MCP does not require those kind of spatial awareness. But yeah, it's still, you know, like Mike was saying, I remember at NashCon there was one table and stupid size 5 was just always in my way the whole game, and that was I would have switched sides just to avoid that.
Yeah.
But anyway,
go ahead.
Circling back, I something you said there is don't bother looking at your opponent's roster before priority. I'm not sure I entirely agree. I see this a lot. I'm a teacher, and I see this a lot with kids when they're like doing an exam paper or whatever. Something I tell them is, if there's a question you can't understand or you don't get, read it and move on and go and do something else. And while you're doing that something else, sometimes the back of your brain, your like subconscious brain, is working through a problem. And then when you come back to it, you're like, suddenly the answer just pops into your head because somewhere in the back of your brain, the subconscious is just plowing through this thing. And I think I would apply that to this as well. I'd have a look and then give your brain a bit of time to like process that. So you may not be making any specific decisions, although maybe you will. Maybe you just go like, man, I hate their extracts. If I win priority, I'm picking extracts. You know, maybe that might color your like, man, I lost priority. Oh, and that might color how you're viewing going into the game. But I do think there's an element that the longer you have to process things, especially in a time-limited scenario like this, the better the outcome is going to be for you.
That's an interesting point. I experience that at work a lot. I write code for work, and I'll just like, if I'm not figuring something out, I'll just leave it, like come back tomorrow, and then I immediately understand how to fix it.
Yeah, I don't know that I even show people my list until we roll prio, because everything's all backpacked away and in a folder or whatever, you know?
Well, at least on Longshanks, you can just see it, right? Most events are on Longshanks.
Yeah, I guess. You can just peek on Longshanks as you're going to the table, so I guess that's a thing to do.
But yeah, I mean, you can't make any decisions until prio's rolled anyway. So
that's definitely true.
And oftentimes, like if I lose prio, I don't even look at what my opponent's crises are because I have no agency, right?
Yes, and I also think that tournaments are a marathon, and any kind of like energy you can save, like I've had to like deprogram myself because when the game first came out, it didn't work the way it does now, right? So there was like this counterplay, da da da. So I can kind of get myself into this like thought process of obsessing over what to do. And I've had to teach myself, like, stop doing that. Just roll prio, see what happens. If they win prio, then it's not even on me anymore. Just show them what you got and let them make the decisions and then deal with what happens next. Cause that's basically how turn zero has been set up. Right.
Yeah. Your next decision point is choose threat and
inside of the table. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And but at then, that point you start looking at their list.
Well, I was going to say at that point, do you not want to have an idea? Okay. They've got this particularly nasty 19 going on. I want to avoid that, and I'd much rather play on 17 than 19. And you might miss that if you feel under time pressure, because like your opponent's staring at you, like, "What threat are we playing, man? Come on, let's get going. I want to go." And that maybe there's more space to make a mistake there.
I mean, we're talking as if these things are, you know, like long or whatever. But roll prio, and then maybe look at their list, and check board edge and all that stuff. There's a lot to even choosing which side of the table you want to be on. It could be that you're running a character that can throw size fours, and are they running a character that can throw size fours? So that's when you got to like start thinking a bit. But in real life, there's a lot of time pressure to get going, and that pressure isn't even imagined. Like you might need more time to beat this person, so every second counts. You know, so the point is that let's get the roll out of the way. If you don't win the roll, let them make the decisions, see what you're dealing with, and then now assess their list and quickly try to decide which table side, because nobody wants to sit there not knowing which side of the table they're going to sit at, because, you know, you want to get comfortable and unpack your stuff. So, you know, that's probably the order of operations. You know, I get what you're saying about thinking and all that, but you're under pressure. I mean, you might be in the middle of like 20 people. You got to run or walk around like five tables to get to the other side, you know, so you're carrying like three bags or something. So, you know, that's what you got to do.
I mean, to push this along a little bit, because I think the meat and bones are still a little bit to come, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So like, I'll give an example. I just had a game at Warfare Weekend where I was playing against an Avengers player, and I was also playing my Avengers list, and he wins prio, picks his secures, gets sword, and I put out, I think it was hammers. And so here's where like what I want to talk about comes into play. So I start now, I lost as the losing prio player. I have a choice between 14 and 18. So I immediately start looking at, I know my 14 is good. Like I can play, at the time I could play like Sam, Hulk, Widow, and like a three threat. It was like Cage or something. And I'm like pretty happy with that, right? Because I have like a Hulk going last or close to last on sword, like that 14 threat. Like he's surely not going to die. So if he could just go last and screw up the board state, like I'm doing pretty good. So then I look at his list and I'm like, well, can he play five characters and then not let my Hulk go last? I looked at his list and he just like didn't have a two threat. And I was like, oh, well, he just can't unless he wants to play his. I don't think he can play it at all, right? You need a two threat to go five wide on sword, or at 14.
Yeah.
So I immediately just chose 14, and I was like, oh, sick. Like, I'm going last with Hulk. And, like, he can't even play Hulk with four characters. This doesn't have a two threat. Like, this is just slam dunk. Whereas if I picked 18, I'd have to do some kind of weird. I'd have to play, like, a more honest game, right?
Right. Yeah, you're looking for an edge, even if it's, like, right. A 1% edge, you know?
So I guess like to put it in more digestible terms for listeners is like, I'll start thinking of, if I'm looking at, I'll pick a threat value of like one of my two choices. And then I'll be like, okay, well, what's the best squad I could build out of my opponent's list? It's like, most people just play like honest, like single affiliation. And it's like, oh, it's I'm playing against like an X-Men player. It's like, okay, well, they're going to play Storm. And then I can just start adding in the characters I think they're going to play. And then I think about that compared to what I think I'm going to play. And it's like, can I beat this? Right. I think there's some degree of experience in that.
You actually reminded me of something I want to say, which is don't get too hung up on leaders. That's something I've had to learn is because keep in mind, you're trying to be as efficient as possible because it is time sensitive. When you first look at people's characters, you might see like Panther and then like let's just say Thor and like Steve, Sam, you know, because Avengers, right? And then I don't know, like Mystique or something, and you might start getting obsessed with like, oh, like wait, what affiliations are they playing? And you get kind of stuck in a little mental loop. Just look at the tactics cards after the characters and don't obsess yet over anything, because I've done this, and maybe you guys have too, where you start like thinking like someone's playing like say Wakanda or something, and then I look at their tactics cards and there's no Wakanda forever, and I'm just like, what the hell? I just wasted like, you know, 30 seconds thinking about Wakanda, and I don't believe this person's going to play Wakanda without Wakanda forever.
You know? Yeah, I agree. Tactics cards are one of the first things I'll look at to try and get a feel for what affiliations they're playing. This is something I've had to like dig through roster submissions where they haven't said what affiliation they're playing and try and figure out what affiliations they are. And the giveaway is always in the tactics cards, because if you're playing like some Avengers, but you haven't got Avengers Assemble, there's no way you're playing Avengers. It's just, you wouldn't do that, right? I mean, maybe.
But even if they did, you'd be happy to see it, right?
Exactly, yeah. They're leaving behind their best tactics card, and sure, I'll take that. So that's kind of the biggest tell of what affiliations they're planning to bring. And you can make some rosters these days, which, like, particularly with the mutants, there's a lot of crossover. So you could easily have, like, a potentially triple affiliated roster just based on characters. So you go to those tactics cards and go, right, well, what are they actually bringing? What affiliated cards are they bringing to back up these characters? Which maybe you skim the characters, but I very quickly go and look at the tactics cards, give me an idea of what I can be expecting. And then again, there's certain things which are kind of ringing a bell. Like if you see Execute, then they've devoted a tactics card to Proxima and Corvus. So it's very likely that Proxima Corvus module is coming in because they've got a tactics card for both of them. And maybe it's a Black Order roster, and that's not very surprising. But maybe it's in an X-Men roster, and you're like, okay, that's giving me an idea. Yeah, they've got these models, and actually they're quite likely to bring them in and play this little module that they've got within the shape of the roster that they're trying to build.
Yeah, I'll also throw a nod to versatile strategy. That's definitely a tell that something might be up where they might bring two leaders at once, is relevant sometimes. Why don't we circle back? What do you do, Mike, when you win Pryo? Like, what are you thinking there?
Yeah, so it's definitely weird now in the new game, because extracts are like there's a lot of reasons to pick either one now, whereas before it was like almost always take your secures with Pryo.
Yeah.
My Avengers list was different in that sometimes you would take extracts into people, but it depends. Now, I think like a lot of the extracts are like worth taking Pryo for. So like it's a lot of it for me is like matchup based. So like if I'm playing against X-Men, like they love Peta Flips. Like I feel like their game plan is significantly worse when they don't have Peta Flips. So like if I win Pryo to them, I'll just windmill slam secures. My life is like way easier. If I'm into like spider foes, I probably would be taking my extracts, because like I don't feel like spider foes like skew any one way on net secures. Like they'll just be okay on all of them. Well, and I would like to like mitigate their shenanigans with like Rhino and well-laid plans potentially and whatnot.
Yeah, I think there's kind of a slightly even simpler rubric, isn't there? That you look, and if they have the same three secures as you, you pick extracts. That's like pretty obvious, right?
That's a good start. Yeah.
Then you take that one step further. What if they've got one extract that's the same as you, but two secures that's the same as you? And Pat talked about this, I think, in his like rationale for like what he chose in the final of season 9. And he felt like, well, if I pick in that setup, if I pick my extract, I know I get an extract I like, and I've got a 2 out of 3 chance of getting a secure I like. And so I'm just kind of playing the odds.
That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah, that is a good way to look at it. I mean, but sometimes you get into situations like old Legacy Virus where two of their extracts are fine, but if they get Legacy, I lose.
Yeah, yeah. If there's like a hard no, then sometimes you've got to bite the bullet and go, okay, fine, you can have your extracts, but I, there's no way I'm giving you that secure. Yeah, for sure, that situation exists.
Yeah, if you don't have like a catastrophic nightmare scenario, then that's a pretty good rule of thumb.
I feel like Legacy Virus is one of the few that's left now that kind of 14s are gone.
So I've played Legacy Virus now, and I don't feel like it is any kind of combo scenario. I think it's just a pretty honest, like, 3-point extract now.
I agree with Mike. I think, actually, all the objectives are great, except for maybe Senators. I think Senators is going to be the, let's find out. Or maybe even fine now, but bad later, you know.
Has anyone asked Cookie what he thinks about Senators? That's the acid test, right?
Yeah, maybe.
I mean,
I haven't talked to him.
I'm sure. I think I asked him about it, and he sent me like a Steve Carell office gif of like a yikes face.
It was funny because when I did my Christmas episode, it was like I think the objectives had come out like a day or two earlier, and even in that episode, I was like, I know Senators is bad for Syndicate, but I also know Senators is going to be a problem. That was like basically my only take, like, day one kind of feelings, you know, and I have not changed my opinion at all on Senators. I think Senators can be scary, so that could be like a good example of one of them where maybe that's the one thing they have that you don't have, and maybe you don't risk it if you're not good on Senators,
right?
Yeah
I don't feel like the secures feel a lot more like neutral. Like, you can, most teams should be able to play on most secures, I think.
X-Men, it's Scoundrels any kind and pay of, to flips.
Yeah, any kind of strong pay to flip plan is weird, and potentially Scoundrels into the right team.
Yeah, like if you're playing a shooty team like Shield or Guardians or something, you might want to avoid Scoundrels. Probably, yeah. X-Men are also just like, ugh, no way, I don't want to deal with Scoundrels. And
Kingpin's still good on Scoundrels, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Kingpin's like the lord of Scoundrels. There's a lot of things that like Scoundrels, but we could make a whole list. I mean, probably like Thanos and maybe Malekith can be secretly toxic on Scoundrels. So.
Yep, I'll buy both of those.
Yeah. Anyway, so I'd say those are the good examples of the, maybe there's the two-thirds policy that doesn't apply to those that we mentioned.
Right. So to drive this a little further, I have another example of a game that I played in my past that I think was pretty notable. Mm-hmm. This was at last year's LVO. Obviously, I had Web Warriors in Black Order, and I'd lost Prio because I was picking Threat, and my opponent picked his Secures. We got Sword and Alien Ship. So my choices were 14 or 20. So I looked at, he was playing Avengers, but he also had Dormammu. And Avengers are like a hard matchup for Black Order. So, and I also like wasn't in love with the fact that I was going to play Web Warriors on Sword. So I thought about 20 Threat, and I was like, well, what's his Avengers team at 20 Threat? And like, he didn't actually have like enough Avengers to make 20 points. Or if he did, he had to play Hulkbuster or something like that. That's the only way it worked. And I was like, well, if he's going to play Hulkbuster into my Thanos, like, I think I'm fine with this. I just like banish him to the corner. And, or he just plays Dormammu, in which case I'd send Dormammu to the corner with Thanos as well. And he ended up just playing Dorm, and it was all fine because of that. Whereas if I pick 14, I think it's like weird for me. I'd have to play some kind of unoptimal web squad into like Avengers. And then just like, ugh.
Yeah, that feels like playing into his strength rather than yours.
Yeah.
I had a similar game. It was like Skrulls and Terrigen, 17 or 20, and the guy had Dormammu, and I went with 20. And at the time, Malekith was at his extreme. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to bring Malekith at 20. I dare you to bring Dormammu. And even in the middle of the game, my opponent's like, yeah, I'm not bringing Dormammu. Like, you know, after we had shown each other our rosters, I don't remember if I commented, but he definitely commented about, oh, yeah, I'm not bringing Dormammu for that. So Yeah, you can use a threat and just think about it. Maybe that is a segue into a point I wanted to make about this topic, which is the pillars of the game. It's something for maybe new listeners. It's this idea that some things are just like really impactful in the game. It could be an objective is really impactful, like we mentioned scoundrels and things like that, but it also could be a leadership, a character, like, you know, at the time Malekith was like the big menace, right? So you quickly just look over the opponent's list for like those pillars, those like super influential characters that have like an abnormal effect on things. I mean, I don't know if you guys have like a good, like the game's changed so much. I'd say Hulk has to be a pillar of the game still. And so, okay, let's think about Hulk. What's the deal with Hulk? Hulk's size 4, he throws things. He can throw size 4. He's really mobile. And maybe, you know, let's just say you have Logan, you know, or Rogue. And maybe Logan can't influence size 4 characters, but Rogue can. So, I mean, this is just a hypothetical, but maybe you're like, okay, well, I want to make sure to play Rogue into that, the Hulk, or maybe you really want to play Logan into the objectives, so you try to pick a threat that limits their ability to play Hulk, you know? Kind of like Mike mentioned earlier, there was a, and his opponent couldn't, like, effectively play Hulk at a certain threat, and kind of work that way, to try to think of how you can interact with these pillars of the game and maybe choke out their ability to play something you don't really want to have to deal with, you know? Like, I wouldn't want to have to deal with Dormammu without Malekith, and I wouldn't have been able to comfortably play Malekith at, like, 17 threat. So it just turned out 20, like, made me happy while also making him sad at the same time. And you're looking for those angles when you're, and now you're looking at the opponent's list. And that's a quick way to do it. It's just kind of be aware of like what's kind of like really good at the moment. I mean, I don't know. You could think of, I don't know that these apply anymore because the game has changed, but, you know, obviously like Voodoo and Black Cat into like single extracts was like, you know, something to consider, right? You guys think maybe another recent pillar? I mean, the game's changed so much. We're going to have to do more pillar episodes.
A good one from that I have an example is in the old, obviously this is an old crisis, but Guardians would like to, they like to play Gamma and because of the mappy aspect of it. They can usually just shoot down anybody and like win the game that way. Mm-hmm. But the problem is like the Guardians, like Dream Corps is 8 points with Rocket, Groot, and Star-Lord. And then a lot of times they often play Hulk, but if they play that core with Hulk, it's like 15 point or 14 points and they just like can't play that at 15. So like if you're playing the Guardians with Hulk, well, okay, so they have to drop Groot to Nebula.
Drop a point. Yeah.
Which
or
yeah. And then, but they didn't even need another 2 threat, right?
Well, you could play a point down. It's been done.
Yeah. Okay. Right? Yeah. They could play a point down, but that's extremely rare.
Yeah.
But assuming that that's not going to happen, you could safely, if you had a good 15, you could safely assume that like you're just not going to see Hulk from them, you know? Mm. And then you start building their squad from there.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like I mean, when Sploosh says pillars of the game, I kind of feel like those are like your gear checks or like your, more importantly, the most proactive things you could be doing in MCP.
Like, yeah, there's a lot of ways to describe it, right? Gear check and all that. That's very accurate. It's just, it's kind of, you could, another lazy word is it's just the meta. Like it's the things, but it's bigger than meta because it's like, well, what caused the meta to be the meta? You know, often it's these, why I call it pillars of the game. They're the things that like kind of bend and shift the game in such a way that you create a meta, you know? And it's, I don't know, we have to do more episodes because a lot of those things, you know, I remember some of our old episodes was like Gamma. I'm not sure Gamma is a pillar anymore. We'll have to talk about that. Research was a pillar. They nerfed Research. Legacy Virus was a pillar. They nerfed that. So, you know, you catching the theme here?
Another way of thinking about this is we've talked about gauntleting in the past. So just like Mike's head simming of what do I do if I'm playing against Kingpin on Scoundrels? What's my plan? Have I got one, or is my plan dodge? In which case, I need to know that because, you know, that's fine. Maybe that'll happen, but this is something that I'm actively thinking about when I'm building my roster in order to have a game plan that I think maybe I haven't played many games into it. Maybe I played no games into it, but maybe I've got a plan that I think is going to work into it.
Yeah. Piggyback off Jacob's point, is that's kind of been my approach to list building for quite a while now. I'd say like 6 to 8 months. It's been like, what are the most proactive, like, good things that I could be doing in MCP across the entire game? Like, nail that down. Like, what are my bare bones, like, cards and characters that I need to bring for that? It then run it into the other things that I think are the most proactive things I could be doing. And then you figure out which one's the best, and then you tune that one to beat the other proactive things.
Yeah. And even just understanding what the person's trying to do, maybe you get... Let's just say hypothetically, you are afraid of Kingpin and Scoundrels, and then the nightmare happens, they get Kingpin and Scoundrels, you know? At least you get to choose the threat and the table edge, and maybe the table makes some of their, like, double moving onto your points or trying to steal your stuff awkward for their, like, medium base, medium mover. So maybe you get a little edge there because, like, you're kind of stealing their agency on turn one with terrain. And then you're thinking of a threat, like, okay, so this is my worst case scenario, but what threat is, like, worse for me? Am I able to kill this, like, Kingpin monster at 20 threat or whatever other threat you get? That's the question you have to ask in that moment, right? And I would say, even if you have a bad plan, having a plan is better than having no plan. And that's, you know, part of playing competitive MCP, but really playing MCP period, right? Just, you know, go in with a plan and then try to execute it, and hopefully it works out. I would say that's,
I think, another
go ahead.
Another quick rule of thumb is, in that scenario, is you could often err on the side of picking your crisis's threat value, because that Kingpin player's almost assuredly got like a laser tight 20 threat that they love on Scoundrels, right?
It's true.
So if you pick an extract threat, it's not 20, it might catch them and, like, a little bit of awkwardness if they haven't been thorough enough.
True. Yeah, and the old system of MCP where the prior person got to choose the threat, it was so easy, right? You could just, I get my thing. I do exactly what I want on it.
Yeah.
The exact threat. Right? We're not living in that world anymore, so I think that's a great suggestion. If anything, just default to taking your threat and try to catch them off guard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully you have a good team on your threat because you brought it. So.
Yeah. If you don't have that, then I guess there's no hope for you.
Yeah.
Anything else, Jacob, on this?
I think it's worth looking at tactics cards again. Sometimes there's notable omissions. Like, I've seen some people running, like, Scarlet Witch without No More Mutants. And that's kind of a sign that they're not really in on the Scarlet Witch train, that she's there for, like, a particular matchup or a particular threat value, maybe. And actually, it's not something you need to think about as strongly, because if they were playing Scarlet Witch every game, they would probably have a tactics card devoted to it. Now, tactics card slots are tight, even though we've got 10. There are often character cards that are good character cards that get left out, and so that can just give you a little bit of a tell about what maybe their game plan is going to be going into list construction.
That's actually a great point. I was chatting with Shane the other day about one of his games that was upcoming, and he was playing like a Brotherhood player, and I had peeked at the Brotherhood player's list, and it's like he had Magneto but no Refraction, and I told Shane that, and he's like, how did I not see that? I'm like, Fraction's not there. Like, are you super scared about Magneto? Like, it seems like he's not super into the Magneto plan, you know?
That's a good one. And the restricted cards, do they have Brace or not? That might lean you towards, like, taking more of a throw character. Here's an example. Let's say they're playing Kingpin, Shadowland, Daredevil. Did they bring Follow Me, which kind of leans towards Shadowlands? Or maybe they brought, like, Patch Up and Sacrifice or Brace Sacrifice, you know?
They've got an offensive or a defensive setup in their cards.
There's Eye on the Prize is another one where, like, if you see Eye on the Prize, you kind of got to think, like, what's going on here?
Yeah, who's playing this?
Yeah, something's up. Is this one of those objectives that can use Eye on the Prize? Like, that's definitely one to catch your eye.
I remember another one was Leaf was playing a convocation list a long time ago, and it had pentagrams in it. And I'm like, when the heck is he playing defenders? And the answer was in the mirror. I thought it was pretty clever. Because you can switch your attack type to like energy on their own Bob Book's turn or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Deception is absurdly popular card, but I think if you see Deception and they're not even playing Brotherhood or Cabal, that might be a sign that they like really enjoy playing Mystique unaffiliated, like more so than their other characters. I'm not sure what you can really do about that because Mystique and Deception is pretty nasty. But, you know, it's still like a tell of like, this guy might just be jamming Mystique like very often. Like, I don't know, maybe it's foes and they have like their little tricks and traps or whatever the heck. And maybe they're going to try to deception you into a trap. So you might have to think about it. Just I think character cards definitely lean towards like a they probably play this character frequently. Because tactics cards are really tight, man. I feel like the biggest squeeze for me is the tactics cards right now.
Dude, same. I feel like I have 10 characters that I love and there's not really anything I would add to it. But like, I feel like I have 15 tactics cards I wish I could play.
And a lot of that is the design philosophy of giving characters the meaningful tactics cards, which I love. But it's also just, oh man, they all have good cards.
Remember when we only got 8 tactics cards?
Oh God.
Yeah, that's
half of them were all you've got field dressing.
Yeah, so what you meant to say, Jacob, is we had like 2 tactics.
You're not wrong.
Yeah, every roster was like R&D and plus whatever. But anyway, so that's a good, like, kind of backing up what I'm saying, though. If they want to bring a bunch of character cards, but they clearly have leaned in such a direction, it's probably a good sign that that character is going to get played a lot. Because it's a lot harder to just throw a card in now than ever before.
Yeah, I agree. That's an interesting point. I like that. Yeah, I don't know. I think if people do more time, like if they spend time, like, I mean, part of this is you have to know what you're going to be playing like pretty quickly. Because you can't, you know, I'm probably going to get meme for saying this, but you can't sit there forever and like figure out what your opponent's going to play. I am guilty of that. I'll take the L, but
it's been done.
Maybe you can sit there forever, but
you're going to get a judge call on you.
I mean, I knew what I was going to play at the time. It was mostly like coming to terms with it.
Yeah. I mean, because the rules packs are the clock starts after deployment, right?
Right, but when you're picking your threat value and your squad, there's no clock,
really. Yeah, exactly. Right?
It's kind of a gray area.
Yeah, so there's an element of social contract there, right? That just you're not going to take forever to pick your squad and to pick your threat and pick your table side.
Yeah, it's never come up, and I don't think it's ever been officially a problem, but it's something to keep an eye on. If your opponent's gone longer than like 5 minutes and hasn't even decided like threat, you might want to say something. There is such a thing as like decision paralysis. It exists. And sometimes you just got to kind of shake people out and be like, hey, man, I need you to make a decision. You know, I've played a lot of games before this game, and, you know, a lot of games have time concerns, and you just kind of learn through those games to, like, you know, not be abrasive, but you got to kind of assert, like, hey, man, like, we gotta move on here. And it kind of sucks. But, like, you know, a lot of that decision paralysis, it's not even because the person doesn't know the right decision. It's just they're kind of, like, trapped in, like, maybe 2 decisions, and they just can't pick which one they want to do. But one of them is probably pretty good, you know, so it's not like mean to get someone to make their decision. It's just like, hey, you have something you're thinking about. I get it, but like decide, you know? It's just,
Yeah, I don't know of a lot of other games that have like a turn zero like MCP has, right?
Well, so like in Magic, it'd be sideboarding.
Right, but yeah, at least on round one, you wouldn't.
Yeah.
You just
go.
War Machine has like list selection. You have two lists, and you have to decide which of your two lists you're going to play against the one of the two lists that your opponent thinks is they're going to play.
But you play so the list in its entirety if you
pick. You got it. Yeah, there's no modularity. Yeah.
X-Wing and Legion both have turn zeros as well, which I played those games heavily. X-Wing was like deployment, and where you deploy is absurdly important. And then Legion is literally deployment like we have. And it has objectives just like MCP. So, yeah, it can take a while to do
that. Fair enough, then.
In fact, Legion is like this massive army you have to put out on the table. So, you know, what do we play? Like something usually about five characters, and Legion you're placing potentially like 10 or almost, when I played it, it was very frequently 11 little units. So that's a lot of decisions.
Right.
It's double, you know. So anyway, yeah, that's just off the top of my head. I'm sure there's maybe more. There's mini games I haven't played before, but I think it's pretty common.
Yeah, I don't know. I think if people spent time to like try to list build their opponent in turn zero, it will go a long way for them.
Yeah, even if you maybe literally just have no idea what people are doing, because you guys did, what was it, 22 episodes? Because no, leaders are also 33, kind of like,
I think.
34.
Because 34, we did a leaderless episode, so there's 33 leaders.
Sure. And so, you know, there's an argument that at some point we need to change our lingo, because leaders are almost like an affiliation upon themselves. But the point is, you know, with 33 and still going leaders, you might literally have no clue what the person's doing. Not well. But I think that even some of the ground rules, like, you know, just choose your threat if you're not sure, because you know that at least you know your threat, and maybe that you'll make them squirm a little bit. I think that's a good blanket one. And then like Jacob earlier was talking about, if you're bringing the same objectives, just take, you know, the ones that are least similar. And there's like some good rule of thumb that we've brought up today. So I think that helps. And you know, you might not know what they're doing, but they might have a mini that scares the crap out of you. And you want to try to avoid it by squeezing threat in some way.
Yeah, I mean, that was people's strategy into Black Order forever, right? Just to play on a threat they didn't like.
Oh, yeah. Back in the old days of Black Order, people were bringing objectives just because the threat value was awkward for Black Order. I know I was doing it. And that may be a thing now, but we just maybe don't know yet what the big bad is yet. Mm-hmm. You know? So we have to figure that out. It's exciting when you don't know things. This is the best part of being a gamer, right? Is this
moment. Yeah. I mean, when they make sweeping changes and the game is brand new, it's always the best time.
Yep. It's discovery time.
But it will be, fear not, it will be broken again and everyone will be mad about something.
Oh, man. What was the picture we took? And it was
War gamers are like, they're either... Or they hate. They hate two things. It's change and the way the things are right now.
Hell yeah! Oh man, that's one of my happiest things we've ever done. I think about that picture all the time. Like, you know, I'm building a roster, and every time I'm thinking about adding Juggernaut or Hulk or Malekith, I'm just thinking of that
picture. Yeah, Kaiju Protocol.
Yeah, if people don't know what we're talking about, go on our Discord, and we can even post it up. But we recreated a meme that exists already, where people were thinking about Warhammer, and we added like the big bads of MCP at the time.
And yeah, I think it's pinned in our general channel.
Yeah, it's freaking hilarious.
Jacob, any last thoughts before we end this up?
One final thing, good piece of general advice, is if there's something that you don't understand about your opponent's roster, just ask them. You know, just say, wait, what is that tactics card? I've never seen that before. So when you're going through and you're trying to understand what the roster does, if there's something you don't get, ask them a question. Partly it's about just like, what is it? What does it do? Is it a character-specific card? Is it a general card that I just don't see play? Like, what is Sucker? Who plays that anymore? But maybe there's a reason they've got it. Yeah. Often, partly it's about information gathering for yourself, and partly maybe they're going to tip their hand. Oh man, this is really cool because if I play it in combination with this character and this character, then this really cool thing happens. People love explaining stuff. It's a human thing to do, and sometimes they can give away like a little secret.
That's an interesting point. That's very true. Tell me all of your eyes on the prize, turn one plays.
Explain I am the prize as if I'm a 5-year-old or something.
Oh, cool. All right. I think that's going to close us out. Listeners, thank you for listening and see you next time.
Thanks for taking the time to listen to our thoughts on the game. As the game changes, the information in this episode may become less relevant, so bear that in mind if you're listening from the future. We also want to thank Discount Games Inc. and Blackgate Games. If you don't have a local game store and they can't get what you're looking for, check out those guys. They'll sort you out. Finally, a big thank you to Atomic Mass Games for making such an awesome game. We'll see you next time in the Danger Room. Simulation complete.